At least you'll get to see your home again. If only for a little while, he adds, trying to be gentle. Yes, Maven, that's just what I want. To stand and watch my home and my old life pass by. But that's the price I must pay. Freeing Killorn and the others means losing my last few days in the valley, and it's a trade I'm happy to make. We're interrupted by a loud crash from a nearby passage, the one leading to Cal's room. Maven reacts first, moving to the edge of the hall before I can, like he's trying to protect me from something. Bad dreams, brother, he calls out, worried by what he sees. In response, Cal steps out into the hallway, his fists clenched, like he's trying to keep his own hands in check. Gone is the bloodstained uniform, replaced by what looks like Ptolemus's armor, though Cal's has a reddish tint. I want to slap him, to claw at him, and scream for what he did to Farley, and Tristan, and Killorn, and Walsh. The sparks dance inside me, begging to be loosed. But after all, what did I expect? I know what he is, and what he believes in. Reds are not worth saving. So, I speak as civilly as I can. Will you be leaving with your legion? I know he isn't, judging by the livid anger in his eyes. Once I feared he would go, and now I wish he would. I can't believe I cared about saving him. I can't believe that was ever a thought in my head. Cal heaves a breath. The Shadow Legion isn't going anywhere. Father will not allow it. Not now. It's too dangerous, and I'm too valuable. You know he's right. Maven puts a hand on his brother's shoulder, trying to calm him. I remember watching Cal do the same thing to Maven, but now the crown is on a different head. You are the heir. He can't afford to lose you, too. I'm a soldier, Cal spits, shrugging away from his brother's touch. I can't just sit by and let others fight for me. I won't do it. He sounds like a child whining for a toy. He must enjoy killing. It makes me sick. I don't speak, letting the diplomatic Maven talk for me. He always knows what to say. Find another cause. Build another cycle. Double your training, drill your men, prepare yourself for when the danger passes. Cal, you can do 1,000 other things and none of them end with you being killed in some kind of ambush, he says, glaring up at his brother. Then he smirks, trying to lighten the mood. You never change, Cal. You just can't sit still. After a moment of harsh silence, Cal breaks into a weak smile. Never. His eyes flick to me, but I won't get caught in his bronze stare, not again. I turn my head, pretending to examine a painting on the wall. Nice armor, I sneer. It will go well with your collection. He looks stung, even confused, but quickly recovers. His smile is gone now, replaced by narrowed eyes and a clenched jaw. He taps at his armor. It sounds like claws on stone. This was a gift from Ptolemus. I seem to share a common cause with my betrothed's brother. My betrothed. Like that's supposed to make me jealous or something. Maven eyes the armor warily. What do you mean? Ptolemus commands the officers in the capital. Together with me and my legion, we might be able to do something of use, even within the city. Cold fear steals into my heart again, brushing away whatever hope and happiness last night's success brought me. And what is that, exactly? I hear myself breathe. I'm a good hunter. He's a good killer. Cal takes a step backward, walking away from us. I can feel him slipping down not just the hall, but a dark and twisted path. It makes me afraid for the boy who taught me how to dance. No, not for him. Of him. And that is worse than all my other terrors and nightmares. Between the two of us, we'll root out the Scarlet Guard. We'll end this rebellion once and for all. There's no schedule today, as everyone is too busy leaving to teach or train. Fleeing might be a better word, because that's certainly what this looks like from my vantage point in the entrance hall. I used to think the Silvers were untouchable gods, who were never threatened, never scared. Now I know the opposite is true. They've spent so long at the top, protected and isolated, that they've forgotten they can fall. Their strength has become their weakness. Once I was afraid of these walls, frightened by such beauty. But I see the cracks now. It's like the day of the bombing, when I realized silvers were not invincible. Then it was an explosion. Now a few bullets have shattered diamond glass, revealing fear and paranoia beneath. Silvers fleeing from reds, lions running from mice. The king and queen oppose each other, the court has their own alliances, and Cal, the perfect prince, the good soldier, is a torturous, terrible enemy. Anyone can betray anyone. Cal and Maven bid everyone goodbye, doing their duty despite the organized chaos. The airships wait not far off, the whir of their engines audible even inside. I want to see the great machines up close, but moving would mean braving the crowd, and I can't stomach the stares of the grief-stricken. Altogether 12 died last night, but I refuse to learn their names. I can't have them weighing on me, not when I need my wits more than ever. When I can't watch any longer, my feet take me where they will, wandering through now familiar passages. Chambers close as I pass, being shut up for the season, until the court returns. I won't, I know. Servants pull white sheets over the furniture and paintings and statues, until the whole place looks haunted by ghosts. It's not long before I find myself standing in the doorway of Julian's old classroom, and the sight shocks me. The stacks of books, the desk, even the maps are gone. The room looks larger, but feels smaller. It once held whole worlds, but now holds only dust and crumpled paper. My eyes linger on the wall where the huge map used to be. Once I couldn't understand it. Now I remember it like an old friend. Norda, the Lakelands, Piedmont, Prairie, Taraxis, Montfort, Ciron, and all the disputed lands in between. Other countries, other peoples, all torn along the lines of blood, just like us. If we change, will they? Or will they try to destroy us too? I hope you'll remember your lessons. Julian's voice draws me out of my thoughts, back to the empty room. He stands behind me, following my gaze to the map wall. I'm sorry I couldn't teach you more. We'll have plenty of time for lessons in Archeon. His smile is bittersweet and almost painful to look at. With a jolt, I realize I can feel cameras watching us, for the very first time. Julian? The archivists in Delphi have offered me a position, restoring some old texts. The lie is as plain as the nose on his face. Seems they've been digging through the wash and came on some storage bunkers. Mountains to go through, apparently. You'll like that very much. My voice catches in my throat. You knew he would have to leave. You forced him into this last night, when you put his life in danger for Killorn's. Will you visit, when you can? Yes, of course. Another lie. Ilara will figure out his role soon enough, and then he'll be on the run. It only makes sense to get a head start. I've gotten you something. I'd rather have Julian than any gift, but I try to look thankful anyways. Is it good advice? He shakes his head, smiling. You'll see when you get to the capital. Then he stretches out his arms, beckoning to me. I have to go, so send me off properly. Hugging him is like hugging my father or the brothers I'll never see again. I don't want to let him go, but the danger is too great for him to stay, and we both know it. Thank you, Mare, he whispers in my ear. You remind me so much of her. I don't need to ask to know he's talking about Corianne, about the sister he lost so long ago. I'll miss you, little lightning girl. Right now, the nickname doesn't sound so bad. I don't have the strength to marvel at the boat, driven through the water by electric engines. Black, silver, and red flags flap from every pole, marking this as the king's ship. When I was a girl, I used to wonder why the king laid claim to our color. It was just so beneath him. Now I realize the flags are red like his flame, like the destruction, and the people he controls. The sentinels from last night have been reassigned, Maven mutters as we walk along a deck. Reassigned is just a fancy word for punished. Remembering Pig Eyes and the way he looked at me, I'm not sorry at all. Where did they go? The front, of course. They'll be attached to some rabble group, to Captain Injured, Incapable, or Bad-Tempered Soldiers. Those are usually the first to be sent in a trench push. By the shadows behind his eyes, I can tell Maven knows this firsthand. The first to die? He nods solemnly. And Lucas? I haven't seen him since yesterday. He's all right. Traveling with House Samos. Regrouping with family. The shooting has everyone on their heels. Even the high houses. Relief washes over me, as well as sadness. I miss Lucas already, but it's good to know he's safe and far from Ilara's prying. Maven bites his lip, looking subdued. But not for long. Answers are coming. What do you mean? They found blood down in the cells. Red blood. My gunshot wound is gone, but the memory of the pain has not faded. So? So whichever friend of yours had the misfortune to be wounded won't be a secret much longer if the blood base does its job. Blood base? The blood database. Any red born within 100 miles of civilization gets sampled at birth. Started out as a project to understand exactly what the difference is between us, but it ended up just another way to put a collar on your people. In the bigger cities, Reds don't use ID cards but blood tags. They're sampled at every gate, coming and going, tracked like animals. Briefly, I think of the old documents the king threw at me that day in the throne room. My name, my photograph, and a smear of blood were in there. My blood. They have my blood. And they can figure out whose blood it is just like that? Take some time, a week or so, but yes, that's how it's supposed to work. His eyes fall to my shaking hands, and he covers them with his own, letting warmth bleed into my suddenly cold skin. Mare? He shot me, I whisper. The sentinel shot me. It's my blood they found. And then his hands are just as cold as mine. For all his clever ideas, Maven has nothing to say to this. He just stares, his breath coming in tiny, scared puffs. I know the look on his face. I wear it every time I'm forced to say goodbye to someone. It's too bad we didn't stay longer, I murmur, looking out at the river. I would have liked to die close to home. Another breeze sends a curtain of my hair across my face, but Maven brushes it away and pulls me close with startling ferocity. Oh. His kiss is not at all like his brother's. Maven is more desperate, surprising himself as much as me. He knows I'm sinking fast, a stone dropping through the river, and he wants to drown with me. I will fix this. He murmurs against my lips. I have never seen his eyes so bright and sharp. I won't let them hurt you. You have my word. Part of me wants to believe him. Maven, you can't fix everything. You're right. I can't, he replies, an edge to his voice. But I can convince someone with more power than me. Who? When the temperature around us rises, Maven pulls back, his jaw tense and clenched. The way his eyes flash, I half expect him to attack whoever interrupted us. I don't turn around, mostly because I can't feel my limbs. I've gone numb, though my lips still tingle with memory. What this means, I don't know. What I feel, I can't begin to understand. The Queen requests your presence on the viewing deck. Cal's voice grinds like stone. He sounds almost angry, but his bronze eyes look sad, defeated even. Passing the stilts, Mare. Yes, the shoreline is already familiar to me. I know that mangled tree, that stretch of bank, and the echo of saws and falling trees is unmistakable. This is home. With great pain, I force myself away from the rail to face Cal, who seems to be having a silent conversation with his brother. Thank you, Cal, I murmur, still trying to process Maven's kiss and, of course, my own impending doom. Cal walks away, his usually straight back bowed. Each footfall sends a pang of guilt through me, making me remember our dance and our own kiss. I hurt everyone, especially myself. Maiden stares after his fleeing brother. He does not like to lose, and... He lowers his voice, now so close to me I can see the tiny flecks of silver in his eyes. Neither do I. I won't lose you, Mare. I won't. You'll never lose me. Another lie, and we both know it. The viewing deck dominates the front of the ship, enclosed by glass stretching from side to side. Brown shapes take form on the riverbank, and the old hill with the arena appears out of the trees. We're too far from the bank to see anyone properly, but I know my house in an instant. The old flag still flutters on the porch, still embroidered with three red stars. One is a black stripe through it, in honor of Shade. Shade was executed. You're supposed to rip a star off after that. But they didn't. They held on to him in their own little rebellion. I want to point my home out to Maven, to tell him about the village. I've seen his life, and now I want to show him mine. But the viewing deck is silent, all of us staring at the village as we come closer and closer. The villagers don't care about you, I want to scream. Only fools will stop to watch. Only the fools will waste a moment on you. As the boat continues on, I begin to think the whole village might be made of fools. All 2,000 of them seem crowded onto the bank. Some stand ankle-deep in the river. From this distance, they all look the same. Fading hair and worn clothes, blotchy-skinned, tired, hungry, all the things I used to be. And angry. Even from the boat, I can feel their anger. They don't cheer or call out our names. No one waves. No one even smiles. What is this? I breathe, expecting no one to answer. But the queen does, with great relish. Such a waste, parading down the river when no one will watch. Seems we've fixed that. Something tells me this is another mandatory event. Like the fights, like the broadcasts. Officers tore sick elders from their beds and exhausted workers from the floor, forcing them to watch us. A whip crack somewhere on the bank, followed closely by a woman's scream. Stay in line! Echoes over the crowd. Their eyes never falter, staring straight ahead, so still that I can't even see where the disruption was. What happened to make them so lenient? What has already been done? Tears prick at my eyes as I watch. There are more cracks and a few babies wail, but no one on the bank protests. Suddenly, I'm at the edge of the deck, wanting to burst through the glass with every inch of myself. Going somewhere, Marina? Ilara purrs from her place next to the king. She sips placidly at a drink, surveying me over the rim of her glass. Why are you doing this? Arms crossed over her magnificent gown, Evangeline eyes me with a sneer. Why do you care? But her words fall on deaf ears. They know what happened at the hall. They might even agree with it, so they need to see that we aren't defeated, Cal murmurs, his eyes on the riverbank. He can't even look at me, the coward. We aren't even bleeding. Another whip cracks and I flinch, almost feeling the lash on my skin. Did you order them to be beaten as well? He doesn't rise to my challenge, jaw firmly clenched shut. But when another villager cries out, protesting against the officers, he lets his eyes close. Stand back, Lady Titanos. The king's voice rumbles like faraway thunder, an order if there ever was one. I can almost feel his smug smile when I step away, moving back to Maven. This is a red village. You know that better than us all. They harbor these terrorists, feed them, protect them. Become them. They are children who have done wrong, and they must learn. I open my mouth to argue, but the queen bares her teeth. Perhaps you know of a few who should be made an example of, she says calmly, gesturing to the shoreline. The words die in my throat, chased away by her threat. No, Your Majesty, I don't. Then stand back and be silent. Then she grins. For your time to speak will come. This is what they need me for. A moment like this, when the scales could tip out of their favor. But I can't protest. I could only do as she commands, and watch as my home fades out of sight forever. The closer we get to the capital, the larger the villages become. Soon the landscape fades from lumber and farming communities to proper towns. They center around massive mills, with brick homes and dormitories to house the red laborers. Like the other villages, their inhabitants stand in the streets to watch us pass. Officers bark, whips crack, and I never get used to it. I flinch every time. Then the towns are replaced by sprawling estates and mansions, palaces like the hall. Made of stone and glass and swirling marble, each one seems more magnificent than the last. Their lawns slope to the river, decorated with green warden gardens and beautiful fountains. The houses themselves look like the work of gods, each one a different kind of beautiful. But the windows are dark, the doors closed. Where the villages and towns were full of people, these seem devoid of life. Only the flags flying high, one over each structure, let me know someone lives there at all. Blue for House Osanos, silver for Samos, brown for Rhombos, and so on. Now I know the colors by heart, putting faces to each silent home. I even killed the owners of a few. River Row, Maven explains. The country residences, should a lord or lady wish to escape the city. My gaze lingers on the Iral home, a columned wonder of black marble. Stone panthers guard the porch, snarling up at the sky. Even the statues put a chill in me, making me remember Ara Iral and her pressing questions. There's no one here. The houses are empty most of the year, and no one would dare leave the city now, not with this guard business. He offers me a small, bitter smile. They would rather hide behind their diamond walls and let my brother do their fighting for them. If only no one had to fight at all. He shakes his head. It does no good to dream. We watch in silence as River Row falls behind us and another forest rises up on the banks. The trees are strange, very tall with black bark and dark red leaves. It is deathly quiet. As no forest should be. Not even birdsong breaks the silence, and overhead the sky darkens, but not from the waning afternoon light. Black clouds gather, hovering over the trees like a thick blanket. And what's this? Even my voice sounds muffled, and I'm suddenly glad for the glass casing over the deck. To my surprise, the others have gone, leaving us alone to watch the gloom settle. Maven glances at the forest, face pulled in distaste. Barrier trees. They keep the pollution from traveling farther upriver. The well green wardens made them years ago. Choppy brown waves foam against the boat, leaving a film of black grime on the gleaming steel hull. The world takes on a strange tint, like I'm looking through dirty glass. The low-lying clouds aren't clouds at all, but smoke pouring from a thousand chimneys, obscuring the sky. Gone are the trees and the grass. This is a land of ash and decay. Greytown, Maven murmurs. Factories stretch out as far as I can see, dirty and massive and humming with electricity. It hits me like a fist, almost knocking me off my feet. My heart tries to keep up with the unearthly pulse, and I have to sit down, feeling my blood race. I thought my world was wrong, that my life was unfair, but I could never even dream of a place like Greytown. Power stations glow in the gloom, pulsing electric blue and sickly green into the spiderwork of wires in the air. Transports piled high with cargo move along the raised roads, shuttling goods from one factory to another. They scream at one another in a noisy mess of tangled traffic, moving like sluggish black blood in gray veins. Worst of all, little houses surround each factory in an ordered square, one on top of the other, with narrow streets in between. Slums. Beneath such a smoky sky, I doubt the workers ever see daylight. They walk between the factories and their homes, flooding the streets during a shift change. There are no officers, no cracking whips, no blank stares. No one is making them watch us pass. The king doesn't need to show off here, I realize. They are broken from birth. These are the techies, I whisper hoarsely, remembering the name the silvers so blithely toss around. They make the lights, the cameras, the video screens, the guns, the bullets, the bombs, the ships, the transports, Maven adds. They keep the power running. They keep our water clean. They do everything for us. And they receive nothing but smoke in return. Why don't they leave? He just shrugs. This is the only life they know. Most techies will never leave their own alley. They can't even conscript. Can't even conscript? Their lives are so terrible that the war is a better alternative, and they're not even allowed to go? Like everything else on the river, the factories fade away, but the image stays with me. I must not forget this, something tells me. I must not forget them. Stars wait for us beyond another forest of barrier trees, and beneath them, Archeon. At first I don't see the capital at all, mistaking its lights for blazing stars. As we sail closer and closer, my jaw drops. A triple-layered bridge runs across the wide river, linking the two cities on either side. It's thousands of feet long and thriving, alive with light and electricity. There are shops and market squares, all built into the bridge itself, 100 feet above the river. I can just picture the silvers up there, drinking and eating and looking down on the world from their place on high. Transports blaze along the lowest tier of their bridge, their headlamps like red and white comets, cutting through the night. Both ends of the bridge are gated, and the city sectors on either side are walled in. On the east bank, great metal towers stab out of the ground like swords to pierce the sky, all crowned with gleaming giant birds of prey. More transports and people populate the paved streets that climb up the hilly riverbanks, connecting the buildings to the bridge and the outer gates. The walls are diamond glass, like back at the hall, but set with floodlit metal towers and other structures. There are patrols on the walls, but their uniforms are not the flaming red of sentinels or the stark black of security. They wear uniforms of clouded silver and white, almost blending into the cityscape. They are soldiers, and not the kind who dance with ladies. This is a fortress. Archeon was built to endure war, not peace. On the western bank, I recognize the royal court and the treasury hall from the bombing footage. Both are made from gleaming white marble and fully repaired. Even though they were attacked barely more than a month ago, it feels like a lifetime. They flank Whitefire Palace, a building even I know on sight. My old teacher used to say it was carved from the hillside itself, a living piece of the white stone. Flames made of gold and pearl flash atop the surrounding walls. I try to take it in, my eyes darting between both ends of the bridge, but my mind just can't fathom this place. Overhead, airships move slowly through the night sky, while air jets fly even higher, as fast as shooting stars. I thought the Hall of the Sun was a wonder. Apparently I never knew the meaning of the word. But I can't find anything beautiful here, not when the smoky, dark factories are only a few miles back. The contrast between the Silver City and the Red Slum sets my teeth on edge. This is the world I'm trying to bring down, the world trying to kill me and everything I care about. Now I truly see what I'm fighting against and how difficult, how impossible it will be to win. I've never felt smaller than I do now. With the great bridge looming above us, it looks ready to swallow me whole. But I have to try. If only for Greytown, for the ones who have never seen the sun. 23. By the time the boat docks at the western bank and we're back on land, night has fallen. At home, this meant shutting down the power and going to sleep, but not in Archeon. If anything, the city seems to brighten while the rest of the world goes dark. Fireworks crackle overhead, raining light down on the bridge, and atop white fire, a red and black flag rises. The king is back on his throne. Thankfully, there are no more pageants to suffer through. We are greeted by armored transports to take us up from the docks. To my delight, Maven and I have a transport to ourselves, joined by only two sentinels. He points out landmarks as we pass, explaining what seems like every statue and street corner. He even mentions his favorite bakery, though it sits on the other side of the river. The bridge and East Archeon are for civilians, the common silvers, though many are richer than some nobles. Common silvers? I almost have to laugh. There's such a thing? Maven just shrugs. Of course. They're merchants, businessmen, soldiers, officers, shop owners, politicians, land barons, artists, and intellectuals. Some marry into high houses. Some rise above their station, but they don't have noble blood, and their abilities aren't as, well, powerful. Not everyone is special. Lucas told me that once. Didn't know he meant silvers, too. Meanwhile, West Archeon is for the court of the king, Maven continues. We pass a street lined with lovely stone houses and pruned flowering trees. All the high houses keep residences here, to be close to the king and government. In fact, the entire country can be controlled from this cliff, if the need should arise. That explains the location. The western bank is sharply sloped, with the palace and the other government buildings sitting at the crest of a hill, overlooking the bridge. Another wall surrounds the hilltop, fencing in the heart of the country. I try not to gawk when we pass through the gate, revealing a tiled square the size of an arena. Maven calls it Caesar's Square, after the first king of his dynasty. Julian mentioned King Caesar before, but fleetingly. Our lessons never got much further than the first divide, when red and silver became much more than colors. Whitefire Palace occupies the southern side of the square, while the courts, treasury, and administrative centers take up the rest. There's even a military barracks, judging by the troops drilling in the walled yard. They are Cal's Shadow Legion, who traveled ahead of us to the city. A comfort to the nobles, Maven called them. Soldiers within the walls, to protect us if another attack should come. Despite the hour, the square bustles with activity as people rush toward a severe-looking structure next to the barracks. Red and black flags, emblazoned with the sword symbol of the army, hang from its columns. I can just see a little stage set up in front of the building, with a podium surrounded by bright spotlights and a growing crowd. Suddenly, the gaze of cameras, heavier than I'm used to, lands on our transport, following us as the line of vehicles passes by the stage. Luckily, we keep driving, moving through an archway to a small courtyard. But then we pull to a stop. What's this? I whisper, grabbing onto Maven. Until now, I've kept my fear in check, but between the lights and the cameras and the crowd, my wall begins to crumble. Maven sighs heavily, more annoyed than anything. Father must be giving a speech, just some saber rattling to keep the masses happy. The people love nothing more than a leader promising victory. Maven steps out, pulling me along with him. Despite my makeup and my clothes, I feel suddenly very bare. This is for a broadcast. Thousands, millions will see this. Don't worry, we just have to stand and look stern, he mutters in my ear. I think Cal has that covered. I nod to where the prince broods, still attached at the hip to Evangeline. Maven snickers to himself. He thinks speeches are a waste of time. Cal likes action, not words. That makes two of us, but I don't want to admit I have anything in common with Maven's older brother. Maybe once I thought so, but not now. Not ever again. A bustling secretary beckons us. His clothes are blue and gray, the colors of House Macanthos. Maybe he knew the colonel. Maybe he was her brother, her cousin. Don't, Mayor. This is the last place to lose your nerve. He doesn't spare a glance at us when we fall into place, standing behind Cal and Evangeline, with the king and queen at the head. Strangely, Evangeline is not her usual cool self. I can see her hands shaking. She's afraid. She wanted the spotlight. She wanted to be Cal's bride. And yet, she's scared of it. How can that be? And then, we're moving, walking into a building with too many sentinels and attendants to count. Inside, the structure is built for function, with maps and offices and council rooms, instead of paintings or salons. People in gray uniforms busy themselves in the hall, though they stop to let us pass. Most of the doors are closed, but I manage to catch a glimpse inside a few. Officers and soldiers look down at maps of the war front, arguing over the placement of legions. Another room spilling with thunderous energy seems to hold 100 video screens, each one operated by a soldier in battle uniform. They speak into headsets, barking orders to faraway people and places. The words differ, but the meaning is the same. Hold the line. Cal lingers before the door to the video room, craning his neck to get a better look, but it suddenly slams in his face. He bristles, but doesn't protest, falling back into line with Evangeline. She mutters to him quietly, but he shakes her off, to my delight. But my smile fades as we step back out into blinding lights on the front steps of the structure. A bronze plaque next to the door reads, War Command. This place is the heart of the military. Every soldier, every army, every gun is controlled from within. My stomach rolls at the power here, but I can't lose my nerve, not in front of so many. Cameras flash, blinding my sight. When I flinch, I hear a voice inside my head. The secretary presses a paper in my hand. One glance at it and I almost scream. Now I know what I was saved for. Earn your keep, Ilara's voice whispers in my head. She glances at me from Maven's other side, doing her best not to grin. Maven follows her wretched gaze and notes the paper in my shaking hand. Slowly he winds his fingers around my own, as if he could pour his strength into me. I want nothing more than to rip the paper in two, but he holds me steady. You must, is all he says, whispering so low I can barely hear him. You must. My heart grieves for the lives lost, but know that they were not lost in vain. Their blood will fuel our resolve and drive us to overcome the difficulties ahead. We are a nation at war. We have been for nearly a century, and we are not unaccustomed to obstacles in the path to victory. These people will be found. These people will be punished, and this disease they call rebellion will never take hold in my country. The video screen in my new bedroom is about as useful as a bottomless boat, playing the king's speech from last night in a nauseating loop. By now I can recite the whole thing word for word. But I can't stop watching, because I know who comes next. My face looks strange on the screen. Too pale, too cold. I still can't believe I kept a straight face while I read the words. When I step up to the podium, taking the king's place, I don't even tremble. I was raised by Reds. I believed I was one. And I saw firsthand the grace of His Majesty the King, the just ways of our Silver Lords, and the great privilege they gave us, the right to work, to serve our country, to live and live well. On screen, Maven puts a hand on my arm. He nods along with my speech. Now I know I am Silverborn, a lady of House Titanos, and one day a princess of Norta. My eyes have been opened. A world I never dreamed of exists, and it is invincible. It is merciful. And these terrorists, murderers of the most evil kind, are trying to destroy the bedrock of our nation. This we cannot allow. In the safety of my room, I heave a ragged breath. The worst is coming. In his wisdom, King Tiberius has drafted the measures to root out this sickness of rebellion and to protect the good citizens of our nation. They are as follows. As of today, a sunset curfew is in effect for all Reds. Security will be doubled in every Red village and town. New outposts will be built on the roads and manned to full capacity. All Red crimes, including breaking of the curfew, will be punished by execution. And At this, my voice falters for the first time.
Conscription age has been lowered to the age of 15. Anyone who provides information leading to capture of Scarlet Guard operatives or the prevention of Scarlet Guard actions will be awarded conscription waivers, releasing up to 5 members of the same family for military service.
It's a brilliant and terrible maneuver. Reds will tear each other apart for such waivers.
The measures are to be upheld at all costs until the disease known as the Scarlet Guard is destroyed.
I stare into my own eyes on screen, watching as I stop myself from choking on my speech. My eyes are wide, hoping my people know what I'm trying to say. Words can lie.
Long live the King.
Anger ripples through me, and the screen shorts out, replacing my face with a black void. But I can still see each new order in my mind. More officers patrolling, more bodies hanging from the gallows, and more mothers weeping for their stolen children. We killed a dozen of theirs, and they kill 1,000 of ours. Part of me knows these blows will drive some Reds to the side of the Guard, but many more will side with the King. For their lives, for their children's lives, they will give up what little freedom they had left. I thought being their puppet would be easy compared to everything else. I was so wrong. But I cannot let them break me. Not now. Not even when my own doom lingers on the horizon. I must do everything I can until my blood is matched and my game is over. Until they drag me away and kill me. At least my window faces the river, looking south toward the sea. When I stare at the water, I can ignore my fading future. My eyes trail from the swiftly moving current to the dark smudge on the horizon. While the rest of the sky is clear, dark clouds hover in the south, never moving from the forbidden land at the coast, the ruined city. Radiation and fire consumed the city once and never let it go. Now it's nothing but a black ghost, sitting just out of reach, a relic of the old world. Part of me wishes Lucas would rap on my door and hurry me along to a new schedule, but he has not returned yet. I suppose he's better off without me risking his life. Julian's gift sits against the wall, a firm reminder of another friend lost. It's a piece of the giant map, framed and gleaming behind glass. When I pick it up, something thumps to the ground, falling from the back of the frame. I knew it. My heart races, beating wildly as I drop to my knees, hoping to find some secret note from Julian. But instead, there's nothing more than a book. Despite my disappointment, I can't help smiling. Of course Julian would leave me another story, another collection of words to comfort me when he no longer can. I flip open the cover, expecting to find some new histories, but instead, handwritten words stare up at me from the title page. Red and silver. It's in Julian's unmistakable swirling scrawl. The sightline of my room's cameras beat into my back, reminding me I am not alone. Julian knew that too. Brilliant Julian. The book looks normal, a dull study of relics found in Delphi. But hidden among the words, in the same type, is a secret worth telling. It takes me many minutes to find every added line, and I'm quietly grateful I woke up so early. Finally, I have them all, and I seem to have forgotten how to breathe. Dane Davidson, Red Soldier, Storm Legion, killed on routine patrol, body never recovered, August 1st, 296 NE. Jane Barbaro, Red Soldier, Storm Legion, killed by friendly fire, body cremated, November 19, 297 NE. Pace Gardner, Red Soldier, Storm Legion, executed for insubordination, body misplaced, June 4, 300 NE. There are more names, stretching over the last 20 years, all of them cremated or their bodies lost or misplaced. How anyone can misplace an executed man, I don't know. The name at the end of the list makes my eyes water. Shade Barrow, Red Soldier, Storm Legion, executed for desertion, body cremated,
July 27, 320 NE. Julian's own words follow my brother's name, and I feel like he's next to me again, slowly and calmly teaching his lesson. According to military law, all Red soldiers are to be buried in the cemeteries of the Choke. Executed soldiers have no burials and lie in mass graves. Cremation is not common. Misplaced bodies are non-existent. And yet, I found 27 names, 27 soldiers, your brother included, who suffered these fates. All died on patrol, killed by Lakelanders or their own units, if not executed for charges without base. All were transferred to the Storm Legion weeks before dying, and all of their bodies were destroyed or lost in some way. Why? The Storm Legion is not a death squad. Hundreds of Reds serve under General Egree without dying, strangely. So why kill these 27? For once, I was glad for the blood base. Even though they are long dead, their blood samples still remain. And now I must apologize, Mayor, for I have not been entirely honest with you. You trusted me to train you, to help you, and I did. But I was also helping myself. I am a curious man, and you are the most curious thing I have ever seen. I couldn't help myself. I compared your blood sample to theirs, only to find an identical marker in them, different from all others. I'm not surprised no one noticed, because they were not looking for it. But now that I knew, it was easy to find. Your blood is red, but it is not the same. There is something new in you, something no one has seen before, and it was in 27 others. A mutation, a change, that may be the key to everything you are. You are not the only one, Mayor. You are not alone. You are simply the first protected by the eyes of a thousand, the first they could not kill and hide away. Like the others, you are red and silver and stronger than both. I think you are the future. I think you are the new dawn. And if there were 27 before, there must be others. There must be more. I feel frozen. I feel numb. I feel everything and nothing. Others like me. Using the mutations in your blood, I searched the rest of the blood base, finding the same in other samples. I have included them all here for you to pass on. I know I don't need to tell you the importance of this list, of what it could mean to you and the rest of this world. Pass it on to someone you trust. Find the others. Protect them. Train them. For it is only a matter of time before someone less friendly discovers what I have and hunts them down. His words end there, followed by a list that makes my fingers tremble. There are names and locations, so many of them, all waiting to be found, all waiting to fight. My mind feels like it's on fire. Others, more. Julian's words swim across my eyes, searing into my soul. Stronger than both. The little book sits snugly in my jacket, tucked in next to my heart. But before I can go to Maven to show him Julian's discovery, Cal finds me. He corners me in a sitting room, quite like the one we danced in, though the moon and the music are long gone. Once I wanted everything he could give me, and now the sight of him turns my stomach. He can see the revulsion in my face, as much as I try to hide it. "You're angry with me," he says. "It's not a question." "I'm not. Don't lie," he growls, eyes suddenly on fire. "I've been lying since the day we met. 3 days ago you kissed me, and now you can't even look at me." "I'm betrothed to your brother," I tell him, pulling away. He dismisses the point with the wave of a hand. "That didn't stop you before. What's changed?" "I've seen who you really are," I want to scream. "You're not the gentle warrior, the perfect prince, or even the confused boy you pretend to be. As much as you try to fight it, you're just like all of them." "Is this about the terrorists?" My teeth grit together painfully. "Rebels. They murdered people, children, innocents. You and I both know that wasn't their fault," I spit back. not bothering to care how cruel the words are. Cal flinches, stunned for a moment. He almost looks sick as he remembers the sun shooting and the accidental explosion that followed. But it passes, slowly replaced by anger. "But they caused it all the same," he growls. "What I ordered the Sentinel to do was for the dead, for justice." "And what did torture get you? Do you know their names? How many there are? Do you even know what they want? Have you even bothered to listen?" He heaves a sigh, trying to salvage the conversation. "I know you have your own reasons for sympathizing, but their methods cannot be. Their methods are your own fault. You make us work, you make us bleed, you make us die for your wars and factories and the little comforts you don't even notice, all because we are different. How can you expect us to let that stand?" Cal fidgets, a muscle in his cheek twitching. He has no answer to that. "The only reason I'm not dead in a trench somewhere is because you pitied me. The only reason you're even listening to me now is because by some insane miracle, I happen to be another kind of different." Lazily, my sparks rise in my hands. I can't imagine going back to life before my body hummed with power, but I can certainly remember it. "You can stop this, Cal. You will be king, and you can stop this war. You can save thousands, millions, from generations of glorified slavery, if you say, 'Enough!'" Something breaks in Cal, quenching the fire he tries so hard to hide. He crosses to the window, hands clasped behind his back. With the rising sun on his face and the shadow on his back, he seems torn between two worlds. In my heart, I know he is. The little part of me that still cares about him wants to close the distance between us, but I am not that foolish. I'm not a little lovesick girl. "I thought that once," he mutters. "But it would lead to rebellion on both sides, and I will not be the king who ruins this country. This is my legacy, my father's legacy, and I have a duty to it." The slow heat rumbles from him, steaming the glass window. "Would you trade a million deaths for what they want?" A million deaths. My mind flashes back to Bellicose Laralan's corpse, with his dead children at his side. And then other faces join the dead. Shade, Killorn's father, every red soldier who died for their war. "The guard won't stop," I say softly, but I know he's barely listening anymore. "And while they are certainly to blame, you are as well. There is blood on your hands, Prince. And Maven's. And mine." I leave him standing there, hoping I've changed him, but knowing those odds are slim at best. He is his father's son. "Julian's disappeared, hasn't he?" he calls out to me, stopping me in my tracks. I turn slowly, mulling over what I can possibly say. I decide to play dumb. "Disappeared?" "The escape left holes in the memories of many sentinels, as well as the video logs. My uncle does not use his abilities often, but I know the signs." "You think he helped them escape?" "I do," he says painfully, looking at his hands. "That's why I gave him enough time to slip away." "You did what?" I can't believe my ears. Cal, the soldier, the one who always follows orders, breaking the rules for Julian. "He's my uncle. I did what I could for him. How heartless do you think I am?" He smirks sadly at me, not waiting for an answer. It makes me ache. "I delayed the arrest as long as I could. But everyone leaves tracks, and the Queen will find him," he sighs, putting a hand against the glass. "And he'll be executed." "You do that to your uncle?" I don't bother to hide my disgust or the fear beneath. If he'll kill Julian, even after letting him go, what will he do to me when I'm found out? Cal's shoulders tighten as he straightens, morphing back into the soldier. He will hear no more of Julian or the Scarlet Guard. Maven had an interesting proposition.
"That was unexpected."
"Oh?" He nods, oddly annoyed at the thought of his brother.
"Maybe he's always been a quick thinker. He got that from his mother."
Is that supposed to scare me? I know better than any that Maven is nothing like his mother or any other damned silver. "What are you trying to say, Cal?"
"You're in the open now," he blurts out. After your speech, the entire country knows your name and face, and so more will wonder who and what you are.
I can only scowl and shrug.
Maybe you should have thought of that before you made me read that disgusting speech.
I'm a soldier, not a politician. You know I had nothing to do with the measures.
But you'll follow them. You'll follow them without question.
He doesn't argue that. For all his faults, Cal won't lie to me. Not now.
All records of you have been removed. Officers, archivists, no one will ever find proof you were born red.
He murmurs, eyes on the floor.
That is what Maven proposed.
Despite my anger, I gasp aloud. The blood base. The records.
What does that mean?
I don't have the strength to keep my voice from shaking.
Your school record, birth certificate, blood prints, even your ID card have been destroyed.
I barely hear him over the sound of my hammering heartbeat.
Once I would have hugged him outright.
But I must remain still. I must not let Cal know he has saved me again.
No, not Cal. This was Maven's doing. This was the shadow controlling the flame.
That sounds like the right thing to do, I say aloud, trying to sound uninterested. But my act can only last so long.
After one stiff bow in Cal's direction, I hurry from the room, hiding my wild grin.
24. I spend much of the next day exploring, though my mind is somewhere else. Whitefire is older than the hall, its walls made of stone and carved wood, rather than diamond glass. I doubt I'll ever learn the layout of the whole thing, as it holds not just the royal residence, but many administrative offices and chambers, ballrooms, a full training court, and other things I don't understand. I guess that's why it takes the secretary nearly a half hour to find me, wandering through a gallery of statues. But I won't have more time to explore. I have duties to fulfill. Duties, according to the king's chatting secretary, that apply to a whole range of evils beyond just reading the measures. As a future princess, I must meet the people in arranged outings, making speeches and shaking hands, and standing by Maven's side. The last part doesn't really bother me, but being put on parade like a goat at auction isn't exactly exciting. I join Maven in a transport, headed for the first appearance. I'm itching to tell him about the list and thank him for the blood base, but there are too many eyes and ears. The majority of the day speeds by in a blur of noise and color as we tour different parts of the capital. The bridge market reminds me of Grand Garden, though it's three times the size. In the single hour we spend greeting children and shopkeepers, I see the silvers assault or aggravate dozens of red servants, all trying to do their jobs. Security keeps them from all-out abuse, but the words they sling are almost as hurtful. Child killers, animals, devils. Maven keeps his grip tight on my hand, squeezing every time a red is knocked to the ground. When we reach our next stop, an art gallery, I'm glad to be out of the public eye, until I see the paintings. The silver artist uses two colors, silver and red, in a horrifying collection that makes me sick. Each painting is worse than the last, depicting silver strength and red weakness in every brushstroke. The last one depicts a gray and silver figure, quite like a ghost, and the crown on his brow bleeds crimson. It makes me want to put my head through a wall. The plaza outside the gallery is noisy, bustling with city life. Many stop to stare, gawking at us as we head for our transport. Maven waves with a practiced smile, causing the crowd to cheer his name. He's good at this. After all, these people are his birthright. When he stoops to speak with a few children, his smile brightens. Cal might be born to rule, but Maven was meant for it. And Maven is willing to change the world for us, for the reds he was raised to spit on. I surreptitiously touch the list in my pocket, thinking of the ones who can help Maven and me change the world. Are they like me, or are they as varied as the Silvers? Shade was like you. They knew about Shade and had to kill him, like they could not kill you. My heart aches for my fallen brother,
for the conversations we might have had, for the future we might have forged. But Shade is dead, and there are others who need my help.